the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. Episode 545, and this is one of our not normally scheduled episodes, because it is not Seth Cox with me from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, but right at instead, it is a special edition of the show with Howard Balzer, also from Cards Wire, as we wrap up the coverage of the offseason program with the voluntary part of OTAs. Howard, how are you doing? Howard's been at all the practices that have been allowed by the media, and so we will discuss that stuff. So Howard, how have you been since the last time you were on? Obviously, we have talked at length pretty much daily over the last couple of months.
Yeah, no, I'm doing good. Always enjoy this time of the year. It's a little somewhat low-key, but it's always good to see the guys out there and, you know, try to take as much as you can from it. As you mentioned, with the OTAs wrapping up, that have wrapped up this week, and then 3 days of mini camp, mandatory mini camp next week. And then it's, you know, about 5 weeks off until training camp at the end of July. So it's been an interesting few weeks, I think, with the second year of the Gannon Asenfort regime and looking at the new players, guys coming back and all that. And I think it's been interesting to see and talk to the players, talk to Gannon, and try to get a feel for what this season might look like.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things, and this is kind of off topic, but this is going to be interesting if this is the last year we see the offseason program as it is, as Adam Schefter came out and said that the NFLPA and the NFL are working to revamp the offseason program schedule, potentially eliminating all like OTA type practices in May, June, pushing everything a little bit later. And I was talking to you at practice the other day that I think like for there's pros and cons for the players, and but ultimately the greatest negative would be for us for coverage this time of year, because we don't know what sort of availability then the coaches and players would have during this part where they wouldn't be doing practice. So I think for that, the only downside is for us and the fans, because we'd have less access, and it just means more lists and rankings, right?
No question. And I think that, you know, if you look at what's nice about this current way of doing it is you have the draft at the end of April, then there's a rookie mini camp. I wonder if they'll allow that to happen to at least begin the orientation
I'm
for those
sure that
guys.
That would probably still be part of it.
And what's the tough thing about this? Everyone's trying to read the tea leaves, but yet no one really knows the specifics of how this is going to work.
That was the weirdest report of all time. It's like, here's a report. The NFL and NFLPA are working on something. We don't know the details.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, one of the downsides too, in addition to us, is just that what's good is, you know, you get the rookies in for the rookie minicamp, then the OTAs begin a few weeks after that, but they have some on-field work before the OTAs. And it's good to get eyeballs on some of these guys on the field. If we have to wait now till whatever it might be till the end of June, it's going to be strange. And I think, as you mentioned, the pros and cons, there's pros and cons for the players and, you know, and all that too. But to go that long, if it would work out that way, where all of a sudden you're not doing on-field stuff until the end of June, I don't know what they're trying to solve with this truly. And I've seen enough players speak up and say, well, I'm not so sure that this is a great idea. And so I really wonder if this will actually happen. And no one has come forward to, like I said, to even say, well, what are they trying to accomplish here? And it's, you know, it's really, really, really tough to say with that. One positive, I think, Jess, is, or well, one positive of the new way they're talking about it is coaches don't have to worry about, okay, you know, after next week, every coach gives that speech, you know, for the next 5 weeks.
That guy.
Yeah, you know, stay out of trouble, you know, stay in the playbook, you know, keep working out. You have to do those things because we got to hit the ground running when camp starts, and they're all wondering what the players are going to look like when they come back at the end of July. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, but who knows? But it's all speculation, and until we really know what they are, you know, trying to get done with this and what it might look like, it's, you know, everybody's just guessing, really.
And so let's talk about over the last few weeks as OTAs have wrapped up. One part we want to focus on what has been said. So what we can take away? What have been your takeaways and impressions from what players and coaches have said? And then in the other segment that we'll do today, it's be about, without revealing things we can't reveal as credentialed media over there at the facility, because there are certain things we're not supposed to report on, even though we are able to see it. We'll talk about what to see, players to look at. So let's talk first about impressions from what you've heard and seen. For me, I think the most notable thing is how very low-key and smooth and positive this off-season program has been, because everyone has been in attendance. Buda Baker, there's been no contract issues this year. But it's been refreshing as we see the 49ers going through it, even though they just got Christian McCaffrey a new deal. You know, Brandon Ayuk, you've got the Bengals with their receivers, you've got CeeDee Lamb over in Dallas and Micah Parsons. And so the story of, like, even though it's the voluntary part, and on our end, we understand that, but it's still notable when players aren't there. For whatever reason, we don't need to speculate why, because, hey, they're not here. But the Cardinals, it's been very, very smooth.
It really has. But the one thing I always say just to that, before I get to the first part of your question, is we are put in a little difficult position, because just so everyone knows that the NFL mandates that only one of every three OTAs have to be open to the media.
Usually it's day one, day four, day seven, day 10.
But the Cardinals, in effect, did a little extra one this week, because if you figure out one of every three, that covers nine. Well, teams have 10 of these, and so some teams will still only have three open. You know, the Cardinals had two open this week, which is a positive. But my point was going to be, we're putting it in a delicate situation, because at the beginning of a week, we'll see, okay, this player's not there, this player's not there. But we don't know if they're there the next day day after. And sometimes it could be an injury. Sometimes it's just because a player has something personal that he has to take care of. You just don't know. And most of the time, if you ask, you don't get an answer anyway, because the coaches are saying, well, we don't want to talk about that.
Well, Gannon's going to say, Yelda Froholtz sale, you know, mandatory is not, like, voluntary is mandatory. Gannon was like, whoa, it's very much mandatory, because it's very much voluntary, because if he says anything otherwise, then the league comes back and there's a grievance against him from the NFLPA. He's like, no, like, you know, it's definitely voluntary. But they've had good participation. Well, I think just the refreshing part is that there's no contract disputes. It's like there's nobody asking for a trade this offseason. There's nobody unhappy with their contract, or at least publicly unhappy with their contract. That's going to happen down the road next year, the year after. But at least this year, in year two, when they're trying to take that next step, they've avoided that, and that's good stuff. But other than that, what have been some of the takeaways from what has been said?
And I think that overall, one of the aspects, when you hear everyone talk, I liken it to this, Jess. It's always talked about how players make a big jump in their second season. Well, I think you can make the same analogy for this organization.
Yes.
In terms of, this is the second season with Jonathan Gannon as the head coach. We can say Monty Ossenford is general manager, but the players don't have a lot of daily contact with him. But the other part is the coaching staff has been totally stable. They didn't lose any coaches. They didn't add any coaches. And so I think that continuity is a big, big plus. And so when you get to this year, now granted, there's a lot of new players, no question, But you also have a lot of returning guys who Gannon knows what to expect of them. The players know what to expect of him. I think we all got a sense that last year the team and the players were buying into the message that the coaches were sending. And I think now it's just ramped up in year two because there's a certain comfort level that those coming in knew what it was going to be like. And then the new players, you know, pick that up from the guys who have been here. And you hear all the players talking about the atmosphere, how good it is. And you wrote the story earlier this week on Buda Baker and talking about the communication and that whole being able to say things to each other. And I go back to that survey that the NFLPA did, and I think this hasn't been looked at a lot, but I think it was very key, is that Jonathan Gannon got an excellent grade from the players on that. And the main question they were asked was about how good is the coach at communicating with the players? Does the coach listen to the players in terms of whatever it might be? And Gannon has made clear, he said it to us, there's an open door, but it really, that isn't lip service. It really looks to be that is the case. And I think the players respect that, especially the veterans. If there's something going on, hey, they can walk in and say, hey, we're not so sure about this. And he'll listen. Doesn't mean he'll change on everything.
Right.
But he will adjust some things. And I think that's the vibe I truly believe that is developing around this team, which creates a team. You know, it doesn't create individuals here, there, and everywhere. It's creating that team atmosphere, which obviously is tremendously important. It's important in all team sports, but especially in the NFL when you have so many players. And I think from things that everyone has said, from you mentioned Froholt and other guys talking about the players that are there. You know, you talked about how many have talked about, and I think one real key is Kyler Murray. We haven't heard from him yet. I'm hoping that we hear from him. But what everyone's saying, it's just that's the biggest difference, really, when you think of last year. I mean, he was just out there. You know, he's just standing out there doing as much as he could, but he wasn't on the field. Now he is, and a full participant, and I think that might be one of the biggest pluses of all for this team because, you know, players see that. They appreciate it. They see, you know, what he's doing. And let's be honest, any success that this team hopefully can achieve this year, a lot of that is riding on Kyler Murray's shoulders.
Absolutely. And I love the continued, and I don't know how much of it is hyperbolic, but the fact that ever since Monty Austin-Fort and Jonathan Gannon have been hired, everything that has been said publicly about Kyler has been a change in the right direction. It's hard to say whether it was misconstrued his personality, was he really a bad practice player? Was he really bad about studying? But for some reason, either because of the contract, because he finally hit that stage in his career, or the fact that he believes in this front office and coaching staff, he has ratcheted things up a notch, and perhaps it is a bit hyperbole, we haven't had to worry about the bashing of Kyler. It has been all love. Gannon adores Kyler and his work ethic. He really is showing up as a vocal on-field leader, not just he had his guys before, but now he is really taking to everyone on the roster, and I think he's finally grown into that in terms of age and personality as well.
I agree with that 100%. And I think a big part of it, I think he was humbled by the injury. The one positive of it is it kind of forced him to be around all last season, even though he couldn't get on the field. And I think he realized how important it was to be there in the off season. He wasn't there that much in his early years. And of course, part of that was his rookie year. It's limited anyway. You're a rookie.
Then it was COVID year.
Yeah, exactly. It was COVID years.
And then next year, the NFLPA was saying, don't go.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the, you referenced the study habits and all that, and all that, the whole uproar over
the study clause,
the study clause and all that. The one thing that was always overlooked in that, I thought, Jess, in that contract was the huge bonuses in his contract for participating in the off-season program. You know, each of the years in the last couple of years of the contract and the new years added on, they were at least $1 million.
Right. That's another reason why Buda Baker was there. That was the quiet part, is that, you know, he quietly sat out during the voluntary part, and Monty put in $400,000 of workout bonuses to make sure that he was there. And whether Kyler was always going to do that or not, I think that message was sent to him: hey, we want you there, we expect you there, and we will compensate you for being there.
And again, I think by going through the rehab, missing the game and all those things, and then from the study part of it, he had to learn a new offense. And I also wonder this part. Previously, the head coach ran the offense. Right now, Jonathan Gannon has this relationship with him, but he's not the guy in Kyler's ear on a daily basis, because he's not running the offense. Drew Petsing is doing that. And I think we also can't underestimate the role that Israel Wolfork, whoever we call Izzy, the quarterback's coach, has on it also. And I think they have developed a tremendous bond over these last, now it's really only 1 year and a few months now, but they've developed that. And they all showed they had respect for him. And I think he's answered in kind by obviously working hard and doing all the things necessary to be the leader of this team. And so I think all those disparate aspects of it have come together. And now, obviously, you got to prove it on the field. This is all just talk right now. But he also showed last year, when he gets in there finally for the final eight games, and no one really knew what that was going to look like. And he just showed what he's capable of in those games. And heck, they were essentially a .500 team. And if Matt Prater kicks a couple field goals, or just one of them, they win that final game, and they're four and four. And of course, if he makes one of them and they don't, who knows? Maybe they don't get Marvin Harrison Jr. So,
yeah, that's why we always had the conspiracy, is that Prater was following the script. Prater, which by the way, interesting note, that was the very first ever game-winning field goal in the final 2 minutes of his career that he ever missed, ever.
So I think all those signs are positive. We don't want to sound like Pollyannas, because we know that there's so many aspects to winning, right? And this is a league where basically the teams that are good are the ones that win close games. And that's what you have to be able to do. You look at teams with losing records, and there's a stat. One of the most telling stats to me, Jess, that is pretty much stays the same every year, is there's anywhere from 70 to 75% of the games in the NFL that are one score games in the fourth quarter. That's a lot of games, and the good teams find ways to win them. The teams that aren't so good find ways to lose them. But all these at other aspects is what gives that team the ability and the confidence to make those plays in the fourth quarter. And I think this team has a good vibe about it. All the things we've heard, all the things we've seen, gives a good feeling. But again, you still have to, make it happen on the field. But they definitely look like, a team that from the front office on down has a plan. They're sticking to it, and the players are following it.
Anything else of note from what has been said by players and coaches that stood out to you in the off-season program?
There's always those things, here and there, certainly. And, Kyler was a big part of it, the James Conner aspect. And it was, one thing stuck out from this week is when Jonathan Gannon will have something written on that in the next few days, where he talked about how minicamp will be different from the OTAs, even though on the field will look similar, but they're longer days because you're allowed to be there longer. So that, I thought that was, interesting to hear about that, to hear Gannon talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. And, hey, you don't want him working too hard. you don't want him working too much because you don't want him to get worn down. The other side of that is that that's one of the reasons that he didn't do a pro day. He didn't do a lot at the combine. He was, you know, he didn't want to train for the combine during the time. He just wanted to train to get ready to play football and the long season that it is in the NFL. So we'll see in the long run how that all plays out. But it was interesting to hear Gannon talk about that. But just to hear the different guys talk about their teammates, right, and how impressed they are with this guy or that guy, you know, whatever it might be. And, you know, you can never, as I mentioned earlier, Jess, you can never underestimate the importance of the whole fabric of a team in this league, perhaps more than any other. I think you don't think of it all that, but here you have 48 guys with practice squad elevations. If they're used, you have 48 guys that have a uniform on game day, and except for maybe the backup quarterback and maybe a backup offensive lineman, pretty much everybody plays.
At least some form.
Yeah,
right.
Right. Exactly. Everybody's a participant, and any play can be the one that helps you win or leads to a big play for the other team and leads to a loss. And so when you think of that and those numbers, the number of guys that will play in a game, God, I mean, it dwarfs any other sport, obviously, just from the numbers. And that's a big part of what determines wins and losses, especially in a 17-game season where, you know, a couple games here or there can turn your – I mean, think of it this way. The Cardinals were 4-13 last year. We know they were close in a whole bunch of games, even with Joshua Dobbs at quarterback. If all of a sudden you win three of those ones you lost, and all of a sudden you're 7-10, well, you're not that far away from being a team that's competing for a playoff spot. And that's the fine line that exists in the NFL from year to year.
Coming up next on the Rest of Spirit Podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk, and let me move on to talk about players to watch. Based on the perspective that we had seeing some of the practices at OTAs, that's coming up next at Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web, talking about Howard Balzer, one of my co-writer on Cards Wire. Howard has been at all the practices for OTAs, and I do need, as I've said before with Seth, credentialed media have certain guidelines. There is 20 to 25 minutes of open practice, and in this part of the offseason there are certain things that we have been asked not to report. And so who's working with whom, who's starting, we can kind of go around that based on what players say, based on video footage that the team releases, but that doesn't mean that we haven't seen things. And so what we want to kind of go through are, without saying anything that we can't say, is to kind of discuss who are the players to watch when training camp opens at the end of next month. Howard, for you, who are the guys that you are going to have your eye on in particular once training camp rolls around, based on what you've seen in camp in the off-season part of the program?
One thing I always focus on is the offensive line. And I think sometimes that's lost in the discussion when a team struggles during a season. Everyone talks about the line in the offseason, right? Oh, we better have the good line. You better be able to protect the quarterback. You better be able to run the football and do all those things. Everyone says that in the offseason. And then as soon as an offense struggles, it's always about the play calling or the quarterback. And everyone forgets a lot of times about that offensive line. Something I have a favorite pet term for that. It's called collective amnesia. You know, we forget what we said in the off season. So I'm always, you know, looking at that. And we all know, and, you know, I was a little surprised, quite frankly, that Jonathan Gannon came out early and said, hey, Paris Johnson's going to be a left tackle. That's the way we're going to go. And now, of course, he says, I can change that at some point, but it sure looks like, obviously, that's going to be the case. I was a little surprised he announced it, but I think he also realized we were all going to see it. And so,
and then we would ask, find ways to ask around it to get the answer.
And then of course, when Paris Johnson met with the media recently, he talked frequently about that, about how he didn't know what was going to happen, but from the day one of the offseason, he was training for both left and right side, and then one day got a text from whoever and said, hey, what do you think about playing on the left side? And then from there, it moved forward. So always looking at that. But I think certainly this line, we can all pretty much say who the four guys are going to be. The big question is who's going to be the left guard. I mean, heck, that was a big question last year along with center.
Yep. Yes, and it was.
I don't think anyone would have expected before OTAs and everything started last year that it was going to be Yelda Froholt going to be the starting center.
I remember last offseason, my conversation on the show with Seth was, you can't go into a season with Yelda Froholt as your starting center, can you? We always felt there was going to be another move. There was going to be another move. And when they added Pat Elflein, like, okay, there's the other one. Then he immediately got hurt. But apparently, and that was one of the very underrated moves of the offseason, was Monty Austin-Fort signing a backup guard off the Browns to be their starting center and to have him play almost every down, I think all but one. Almost all but one snap on the season, and he wasn't bad. He was a decent center.
Yeah, he was. He was very solid, and that's a very important position in terms of calling the protections and all those things and getting everybody on the same page. And I think the only snap or snaps
he came out for a play for an injury, I think it was, and Cologne came in and snapped once.
And I think it was because it was called down because the spotter saw him wobble a little bit, and they thought he should be tested for a concussion.
That's right. That's what happened. He did have to go be checked for – that's the only reason he didn't join Paris Johnson in the Every Snap Club that last season.
So the under-the-radar signing, similar to Froholt, I thought this year, was Evan Brown. And there's a guy – that when he was signed, it was a modest 2-year contract. But this is a guy who started 16 games.
And it's only a 1-year deal. It's only a 1-year deal.
Okay. Thanks for correcting me. Yes, definitely. And he started 16 games for the Seahawks last year. And then we heard Froholt talking about him, how strong he is, and all those things. And so, he's looking like a guy. He might be right now. I mean, you have Elijah Wilkinson back. I mean, you have John Gaines, who's coming back from his knee injury, and it said he'll be ready to start training camp in some capacity. Everyone thinks he'll be better at center, but he could play guard. You've got Cologne, as you mentioned, and some other guys who might be in that competition. But
they literally brought everybody back. They brought Wilkinson back. They brought Cologne back. They brought O'Donnell back, and they haven't cut Dennis Daly yet, so we will see. But the interesting thing is that originally with the signing of Brown, there was a lot of questions. Well, okay, so is he going to challenge Yelda, or is he going to be the starter at center, and is Yelda going to be in the mix at guard, or is Evan Brown going to be? So thanks to things that have been said and that have been seen on social media, we know that Brown's in the mix at left guard. Paris even referred to, I think there was an article I was reading today. I wasn't there for that, but he referred to lining up next to Evan. How he's built like SpongeBob. He's very athletic, but built square like SpongeBob, only hopefully not as soft and squishy.
I might go out on a limb and say that right now it might be his job to lose.
I would guess that. I would guess that, based especially from what we saw last year, that the guy that was leading the way in OTAs was the week one starter. And that's how things ended up going over the course of the year. So yeah. And that's the one area, the offensive line, at least with this coaching staff, they don't try to change things much once they get it set early on, because they want that continuity going through the season. It's the only reason that they're going to change it if there's a they drastically need a change or injuries cause that. And so I would expect, based on what we've seen on video footage from the team and comments from the likes of Paris Johnson, that Evan Brown is probably in the lead, likely going to be the starting left guard. I know that's not going to excite nobody. That's going to excite no fans, especially because he's not played left guard. He was a starting right guard. He was a starting center. And so it's going to be new for him this season. But you can't have an all-pro at every position. And honestly, you don't need like all Pro Bowlers to have a solid line. If you have average to above average play from all five or four of your five positions, you're going to be in a good spot offensively, because you don't need elite. You need enough to protect your quarterback. You need you just basically need them to do enough for the run for rundowns, and then enough so the quarterback can complete passes.
You pointed that out, because I could talk for a long time about different offensive lines over the years that I've seen that didn't have those Pro Bowl guys and those standout players, but played well as a unit, and everybody stayed on the field. And we saw that for the most part last year, where a bunch of guys started all 17 games. It's the continuity, knowing what the guy next to you is going to do. There's no unit like that on the field except for the offensive line. And one I'll point out is back when the Giants were playing really well, and everyone's talking about Eli Manning and all that, they had five offensive linemen that the best guy there was probably one of the guards, Chris Snee, but they had a guy playing left tackle who was playing totally out of position, David Deal, who was a guard. But throughout an entire season, they didn't miss a snap, the entire regular season. A couple of years ago, the Rams had that when they went to the Super Bowl. They had an offensive, when they went to the Super Bowl, they had an offensive line that nobody missed snaps virtually the entire year until the last game, when it didn't matter, you know, what happened. Then, you know, gosh, you know, the guy on TV, the left tackle, all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank. I can picture
Andrew
him.
Whitworth.
Andrew Whitworth, you know, he retired. And then Roger someone else left. And all of a sudden their line that year was as disheveled as the Rams were, you know, a couple seasons ago. So that is so key on that offensive line. The five guys that open the season, it's rare that it happens, but sometimes it does. And when you have that continuity the whole year, boy, that's what can make an offense hum. So we talked a lot about that. I know we don't have a lot more, but a couple other guys that I'll just put out there is, I think, a real under-the-radar guy, and people have forgotten they even signed him, especially after the Cardinals a few weeks ago signed Zay Jones, is Chris Moore. I think, you know, he's a little older than Jones, but they both got, you know, similar guaranteed money. Jones got a little bit more, like $1.15 million, but Moore got $750,000 guaranteed. They both got the same signing bonus. So I think that could be an interesting competition for one of those wide receiver spots. That's one thing I've noticed. And, you know, he's looked pretty good out there. And what, you know, in what the coaches always, it's like the combine, you know, they call it the underwear part of, you know,
Bruce,
of the
Bruce
offseason.
Arians like to call this, they're playing soccer because they're in shorts.
But two guys on defense that had difficult seasons last year because of injuries. And one is B.J. Ojulari and the other is Garrett Williams. And we saw them both start to really contribute at the end of last season. And, you know, Williams might have been a first-round pick if he hadn't torn his ACL his final year in college. And Ojulari, second-round pick last year, came, you know, he had a hamstring during some of the off-season work before, you know, around the combine. Then he hurt his knee and just got off to a very, very slow start. They're healthy now. I think they're going to be two integral parts, or they have to be, for this team to play a lot better defense. And I think they definitely have the ability to do it. And now that they got a lot of the learning out of the way from the defense, and now they can just go out there and play fast and be healthy, you can just see these guys. Ojulari got a little bigger. Williams just moves around tremendously. They can use him in the slot. They can use him on the, you know, on the, you know, on the, you know, on the corner if they want to. And so I think, like I said, I think those two guys have looked good, and for fans to watch them in training camp, because like I said, I think they have a chance to be really big pieces on this defense.
And for me, there are a couple of couple other guys to kind of watch once training camp starts. And one would be on the offense would be Greg Dortch. The role that the receivers have are going to be interesting, but Dortch has the opportunity to kind of lock down that slot receiver role. We'll see what happens. And a guy that started a lot of games down the stretch and looks like he might be an odd man out, but with, you know, Garrett Williams coming back, the drafting of Max Melton and Elijah Jones, keep an eye on Star Thomas to see how he is used early on. I will say that we kind of said the same thing about Christian Matthew last year, and he was cut by not too terribly long after the season began. But because he started so many games late last year, he plays in a way that Gannon likes for his cornerbacks. He's real physical. I have a feeling that he's not going to give up that starting job as easily as, you know, we think that Max Melton's going to take it. I think Star Thomas is probably going to have something to say about that, at least early on in camp.
No question about it. And, you know, the way that whole defense with all the, you know, guys that have been added to the defensive line, obviously they needed help there. They needed size. You know, they needed athletic ability and a lot of these new guys.
They needed players, let's be honest, because by the end of last season, like, their starters, like, you wouldn't want to have, like, the guys they had starting in that last game of the season are guys you wouldn't want to be starting on any team. They're fine players, but they're all players you want as depth. And so you were playing with, the caliber of player. You were starting, you know, defensive linemen 4-5-6 or 5-6-7 on a normal talented roster.
No question about it. So, obviously, they've upgraded there. And one more guy I'll go back to on offense. I remember tweeting this. I think it was right around the draft when everybody was, you know, really, really thrilled with the pick of Tip Reimann, you know, the tight end. And I think he's going to definitely have a role on this team. But the one thing I tweeted, don't sleep on Elijah Higgins.
Right.
You know, because here's a guy that, and let's remember, what was it, 13 rookies that had pretty significant playing time last year, not only their own draft picks, but guys like Blake Whitehart and other undrafted free agents like DeMercado, and then the guys they picked up on waivers with Star Thomas was one, Higgins was another. And, you know, Higgins was a wide receiver, and the Dolphins drafted him, and the Cardinals, he was flopping around what he was going to be, and he can make plays.
He was pretty, like, if it weren't for Trey, like I've talked about this with Seth on the show, is that if it weren't for Trey McBride having the season that he had, the production that Higgins had would be the talk of the car, like the next tight end, like the stuff that we've been hearing from about Dan Arnold, about Ricky Seals-Jones, Darren Fels, all these tight ends that always had kind of an uptick in production at the end of this previous season. Then we always go into the next season excited about what he's going to do. That would have been Higgins this year if it weren't for the fact that Trey McBride had already broken out into a star. It's going to be great to kind of see that, especially in one of the facts that people might not remember is that when the Cardinals were awarded Higgins, he was of all the players cut, he had the most waiver claims placed on him, which five teams tried to claim Higgins. And so he might end up being a low-key, very, very productive addition, former sixth-round pick, athletic, to see what and the way that the Cardinals like to use tight ends. They like using two tight ends. They like using three tight ends. That Higgins and Reimann are gonna battle for playing time and the roles that they have.
They're going to get it, and it's just going to be what the situations are, like you said. And it's weird because you mentioned if it wasn't for McBride, let's be honest, if it wasn't for Zach Ertz, first of all, I never really thought he was healthy at the start of last season coming back from the ACL. Hardly anyone talked about it because so much of the focus was on Kyler's ACL. But he wasn't himself the beginning of the season.
Oh,
then
there was the production. I thought he was going to have a 100 catch, 500 yard season based on like the first 3 weeks of the year.
Then, when he had the next injury, that was the thing that opened the door for McBride to do what he did. And then Higgins had those spot action really, but obviously Kyler had enough confidence in him and, you know, to go to him at different times. And so that helped, you know, that helped. And then they moved on from Ertz because they say, hey, these guys are the future. Zach Ertz is not. And so that was, you know, you hate to, I mean, it happens a lot of times where an injury just opens up opportunities for other guys. And so, you know, what you really see, Jess, overall is how much that, what it looks like, how the depth has improved. We're talking about the offensive line. I mean, look at how many guys are out there, and there's going to be some guys who have played for the Cardinals, and I mean, they all can't make the team.
Right. Well, it's going to, like, kind of on my projections, I'm like, it's going to be hard for a guy like Dennis Daly to make the team. It's going to be hard for Carter O'Donnell to make the team. It's going to be hard for rookie Christian Jones, their fifth-round tackle pick. It's going to be hard for him to make the team because you got Kelvin Beachum ahead of him, and it's going to come down to, do you want a rookie as your swing tackle backup, or do you want a guy like Beachum who you know can do it?
And they love having versatility in their guys. And so some would say, well, if you like his potential, keep him as the fourth tackle, right? Well, there's not that many spots on the roster.
Correct.
And so you get, and I don't know that he could play guard, but a lot of these other guys, you know, they can play. They can play a little tackle. They can play a little guard. They can play some center.
Well, then
and
you
all
consider
those
the things. Guaranteed money, like Wilkinson. He's got a fully guaranteed deal. Brown's got guaranteed money. Cologne's got guaranteed money in his, and it's not just guaranteed stuff that he already paid, but the salary. So, like, you decide to cut them, you're still paying them that salary. While that's not the deciding factor, I always like to say that, you know, when you put guaranteed salary in a guy's contract, especially when it hits like the $400,000 and more, like you're planning on them being on the roster, and it'd have to be something very drastic for that not to happen.
Oh, exactly. Now, Jones would obviously, as one example, be a candidate for the practice squad. Provided that no one would claim him on waivers. But if anyone claims him, then they have to put him on the roster. And so bottom line is he was a fifth round pick. And so, but those are the risks you take sometimes. And like we said, you just can't keep everybody.
Nope.
but that's what shows that a team is getting better when all of a sudden you're going, boy, who are they going to keep? They're going to be cutting, you know, some guys, not only that are pretty good players, but look to be, you know, guys with good potential. And they're going to have some, you know, some tough decisions to make, you know, come the end of August.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Syria podcast, special Cardinals Talk on the Web. I've had Howard Balzer talking OTAs. Our next show will be in a couple of weeks when I am back from traveling and minicamp is over. And then after that, we hit the softer time where I'll be doing some off-season previews about the opponents, with opposing writers and things like that. Howard, thanks for your time. We will get together soon enough, I'm sure, for another show. That's Howard Balzer. I'm Jess Rude. This is the Rise of Sierra podcast. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.